thanks for being back with us. Of course, I'd like to have you check us out every week on
The Valley Outdoors.
And where else, Ava?
On Facebook.
Exactly right. Like us, please. A lot of cool stuff out there. And if you want to know what else is going on in virtually anywhere in the U.S. when it is in regards to the outdoors, you can check it out on the map. And it's up to date pretty much everywhere in the country. So pretty cool stuff. So, you know, we talked before the break. Hey, what was your experience in this last week in the outdoors? Mine was fishing because I didn't have time to go deer hunting. I had some things I had to wrap up before the water gets real firm. But really what it comes down to is weather. Is it an advantage when it's, I don't mean warm, but if it's cold in the mornings, 45, 50 during the day? What do you guys think? I've got an opinion that I want to express once you guys. What do you guys think? Don?
Well, I mean, it's always pleasant if you're sitting in a blind. I mean, it's...
So nap time is not a bad thing?
I didn't take a nap in the blind. I was paying attention. if I take a nap, I'll be looking at my camera later and showing...
Wishing you wouldn't have?
Yeah, wishing I wouldn't.
Is that going around in your brain thinking, I'm done?
No, I'm paying attention most of the day. It is more pleasant if it's those mid temperatures because you dress for it. I mean, I think last weekend when I went out, it was 25 degrees. Even that wasn't bad, but I think the hunting or for the sake of deer hunting, it's better if it's cooler than if it's warm, and especially for those people that are driving in a woods. If you're walking out there, you don't want 50 degree weather. You'd rather have that 25 to 32.
No question about it. If you're fully geared up and not planning on taking a drive and then you take a drive,
yep.
I think you're right.
Yep.
Ava, what are your thoughts?
Honestly, like this past weekend, it was warm and I had one of the best sits that I've ever had. So I'm kind of like, I don't know. Like, does it really matter? I think once the temperatures start changing and the rut's on, I mean, it's on. I don't think it matters anymore.
Well, I think cooler weather will encourage or bring on the rut. So,
I think a lot of it, and this is my take on it, Don. You can have warm or warmer temps if a lot of times there may be it was cold beforehand and miserable, and they're finally, hey, let's go. We're going to go eat, move around, and you know, take advantage of what food there is. The other thing is to look at if there's a weather system or something that is planning on coming as well, or if it seems like it's relatively stable weather and they're moving, but there's nothing extreme either way. You know, one of the things that I was thinking about is this. When we want to get people involved in the outdoors and it's 15 to 20 degrees outside and you're standing outside all day, that's a hindrance to people as far as getting people involved that aren't normally hunters,
right?
Because you're going to sit there in a stand. It's not necessarily, it doesn't necessarily have a sunflower heater in it and, you know, all the other
amenities. My little buddy.
Man, I mentioned that. I had a friend that was out hunting and he sent me a picture. He was in a ground blind. And what's he got in there is a heater.
Of course.
I said, what do you think, you're ice fishing?
Yeah.
Oh, having a heater makes a world of a difference.
See, so this is the whole point. We talk about trying to get people involved in the outdoors, and what ends up happening is conditions can prevent it or promote it. If you have a friend of mine, we've had him on the show, Sean Redding with the Red Wing Fishing League, and he and his daughter went out. His daughter, he shot a buck the night before, and his daughter shot a massive buck the next day. But it was comfortable to sit outside. It wasn't abnormally cold. It wasn't abnormally warm. But really what it comes down to is, from what I've seen across the state with the weather conditions that they were, from people that I've talked to, and again, I'm taking it as anecdotal because it's not from everybody across the whole state, but from a number of people, the hunting was good. And when it comes down to it, I think it's sometimes it's better to get people involved in the woods if it's not the extreme, Don, like 15 degrees, and you're going to sit in your 15 to 20 degrees, and you're not going to have a heater on, you're not going to have anything on. So it turns to be miserable, and they're not going to want to sit out there. It's like, okay, we're not going to sit out here all day. Or I can't sit out here all day. I'm freezing my butt off 2.5 hours in because they didn't dress properly. So all those things add up. So again, put out to you, is it better for a nap? Or is it better for deer?
Well, I didn't go hunting to go napping. You know, the biggest problem with cold weather is that depending upon your age, you get a little stiff, you know. So if
it doesn't matter. You still get, I mean, when it's cold, it gets miserable.
Yeah.
And that's one of those things that adds up. But, you know, again, it's just one of those things you kind of have to think about and you consider when you really, really look at the hunting or getting involved in the outdoors. Conditions could be great for amazing deer hunting, but does it mean that you're going to be successful? So I think that's one of those things that comes into play, and how does that actually pan out, good, bad, or indifferent? So again, really the point is take the time, take somebody else out in the outdoors and really have them enjoy what you're doing. I brought a buddy out fishing this last weekend, and he'd never really been. Had a blast.
Yeah, you notice he didn't take us, Ava.
No, because you guys are deer hunting.
Oh.
Yeah, we wouldn't have went anyway.
That's right.
I tried three
but
people
he didn't
before.
Ask either, did
I
he?
I called three people before I found one person who wasn't deer hunting, so
oh.
It's all good. Jump into a quick story. South Dakota. Gentleman in South Dakota boated a state record fish. Aaron Shook boated 16-pound, 8-ounce walleye at the end of this last month in October. Beat the South Dakota state record for the species that stood for more than 20 years. 20 minutes into a fishing trip on Oahu when he hooked the fish, trolling crankbaits near Akaska, which is up in the northern section of that body of water. He and his partner to the fight went pretty smoothly until he got his first look at the fish. I could see it out of the depth of the water from 5 feet from net range and almost had a heart attack. I think it panicked a little bit, just started cranking on the rod. Then He put it into the net. The anglers were pulling a Reaper crankbait made by Wally Nation Creations at 40 feet of water on a channel edge. So if you're familiar with that area, I don't know if you are, Don, but Oahu is a reservoir.
Yep.
And it is a flooded, crazy deal. It's 180-some feet in the middle, and then it comes up in the trees. So when you're trolling the edges, a lot of times you're fishing and ticking those treetops. And those fish will suspend in those trees. So it's a kind of a cool deal. This is the funny part about it. Okay, they're using lead core. And
are they just up north of the dam?
Oh, they're, yeah.
Way up.
As far as I remember where it's at, yeah. And so they went to weigh this. This is the story that's the craziest part about this.
Okay.
Temperatures in the single digits when they got out there. The wind made getting an accurate weight on the water impossible as the scale kept bouncing between 15 and 16 pounds. After fishing a little longer, they decided to head in and get an accurate weight on the fish, which turned out to be an even bigger challenge than catching it. When they weighed the fish with the Schumacher scale at the boat ramp, it showed 15 pounds, 12 ounces. They stopped down to the town of Selby for a certified scale, but they couldn't find one, so they had decided to head home. They got back to Bismarck, grabbed a scale from his boat, and came up to weigh the fish. It was 16 pounds, 5 ounces. They again tried Schumacher's scale after warming it up and showed 16, 5 again. So two scales, but you have to have, in order to beat the state record, it has to be a certified scale.
Right.
Okay? There I sit with a state record on the fish cleaning table. Nobody's going to know about it, he said. It was just eating at me. This fish may be a state record. I don't know where to take it. Wally stayed in his refrigerator all day Sunday while he called around to locate a certified scale. Finally finding one in Pollock, one morning he decided to weigh the fish one more time before making the trip and the drive to South Dakota from where he was. The scale didn't show 16 pounds. He decided he was going to take the fish straight to the taxidermist. He got it in finally. 16 pound, 5 ounces the next day.
Usually they lose weight, don't they?
They do. What happened was, my guess, the other red light, it was probably heavier. The official weight witnessed by the officials announcing a new record was even better. was 16 pounds, 8 ounces, 33 inches long, 21 inches in girth, topped the previous record of 16 pounds, 12 ounces, and that was in the Fort Randall tailwaters. Pretty cool story.
Wow.
So, yeah, got to love that. Isn't that fun?
Yeah.
Well, tell you what, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back. Got more stuff coming up. Hang tight for more stuff with us. See ya. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together we can make a difference. Well, Don.
Yeah.
In the between the commercial break, you're showing us...
Well, I should be in my stand right now. That's what I'm showing you.
Plain and simple, yeah.
There was a really nice buck standing in front of my stand.
So the advantage is we don't need to say what time it was there.
No.
But you showed me a photo of it.
Yeah.
And
during shooting hours.
Yep. And yeah.
And I haven't seen him for
quite some time.
You know,
there's a good thing and a bad thing about trail cams.
Yeah.
No kidding.
I mean, it's... It dinged while we were sitting here.
See?
Oh, boy.
Hurry up. Get out there, Don.
Yep.
That's the way that works. We've had several stories on the wolf population and a lot of the controversies surrounding wolf regulations in various states, whether it's anywhere in the upper Midwest. It's been a big controversy. The story that I pulled out this week is... one that kind of surprises me in one way, but not in another. The Michigan wolf attacks on dogs has increased in 2023. There's kind of a story that goes along with this one. I'm going to paraphrase it. A lot of people will chase bear. Dogs will chase, you know, they hunt bear with dogs.
Right. They do this in Wisconsin as well.
And Michigan, yep. And in this case, it's in Michigan. And they're about 3/4 of a mile into the woods when one of the dogs split off of the rest. And the owner thought, well, maybe he's going to go around and kind of head off the bear. The bear. They got behind the dogs and they cornered a bear, and they thought they'd surround him and push him away from us. But wolves had targeted this other dog. The 5 other hounds treed a bear, prompting them to head to the tree while monitoring the other dog's movements. Okay, the dog's name is Chase, and. It was about an hour from when the wolves howled until the crew got to what was left of Chase.
Right.
And in less than that time frame, there was hardly anything left of the dog.
Right.
So when you look at that aspect of it, if you're walking in the woods, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You could be walking in a nature hike. You could be doing who knows what.
Right.
And I think one of those issues that really comes up, they reported it to the Michigan Department of Natural Resources, but they said that they have an idea where all the wolf populations are. But they, in this particular case, they said the department's ability to track and monitor this particular hunter has lost faith. He said they don't have a clue where this particular pack of wolves is. And they're convinced that they may not know a lot of others as well. So some controversy surrounding that whole avenue. That happened September 26th. Was not far from Arnold, Michigan. And I'm telling you, it gets to be a concern, especially when you look at the population of wolves and what it's doing in a farmer situation as well as a hunter situation. So DNR website shows a total of 78 dogs have been killed and 39 injured by wolves in the Upper Peninsula since 2009. which includes 67 hunting dogs and 11 non-hunting dogs killed. That's of the whole peninsula. Most reports that Chippewa County was 17, Mackinac was 16. All numbers have fluctuated over the years. The dog deaths from wolves hit a peak of 16 in 2014. So there's significant difference in what's going on right now.
Yeah, I think they've really, the packs have really grown. And it's a similar situation in northern Minnesota as well. But I think Wisconsin and the UP of Michigan have really exploded in the last 2 to 3 years.
And due to federal restrictions, the DNR officials cannot control the wolves through lethal enforcement and are limited in their responses, mostly to documenting the attacks. The Brian Rowell, the DNR wildlife biologist who tracks the attacks, said there's all kinds of compounding things that may contribute to an increase, but ultimately he's unsure exactly what's driving that dynamic. I don't know what switches them, he said, but hunters and others are urged to report wolf attacks. I don't know, Don. I've seen the controversy coming up, whether it's in Wisconsin and, you know, the harvest and what ends up happening with certain elements within, can you regulate, can you not? Should you not? And I think we're at a point now where there's significant enough impact, both in the farmer situation, wandering in the woods situation, even if you're in the woods. Yes, people who want to go out and enjoy the woods, they will be impacted by this in a dramatic way. The problem is when it's too late, it's too late. And understanding what that population control is important, but I don't think they do have a solid understanding what the actual number is. And that's really, in my mind, one of those controversies that comes up, and I think we really need to get an eye on what's going on there. I don't think it really matters whether it's here, Wisconsin, or Michigan. Across the board, I think we need to have an understanding of that so we make sure we have an understanding of what is it doing to the herds, especially when those deer get herded up in a heavy snow winter, and then it's a free-for-all with the wolves because the deer don't move, and they're just free game. It's free dinner parked in one spot. They don't have to move. They just sit there and wait. So, yeah, one of those things.
It'll affect the population of deer.
It will, but I think it's also affecting, you know, when you're out in the woods. Let's say you're hunting grouse, same thing. Yep. Doesn't matter where. So, well, thanks for joining us, everybody. Glad to have you guys with us this week. For Ava, Don, and myself, Eric, we are the Valley Outdoors. Join us next week. Check us out on Facebook and where else? TheValleyOutdoor.com. See ya.